Now we're going to continue with the role play conference session between Pastor Bowles and Mrs. Johnson. You will recall that Mrs. Johnson had talked about his son, and then with the pastor's talk had begun to talk about herself and her own feelings. And we had noticed, as we concluded the last segment, that the pastor had asked a number of questions about duration, severity, and how much difficulty it was really causing her to have this problem that she had. And we noted that that was a good technique for the evaluation process that she's going on at this point. Let's pick up with the interview now, right where we dropped it at the end of the last segment. I wonder if we could talk briefly about what kind of some of the many inputs that are coming to the pastor in this conference situation here. We talked on the previous talk about her pacing, the pacing of her speech, and the way she clips her sentences off. And I think you noticed that after she began to talk about her own feelings, that her speech became a bit smoother, and I guess the modulation was better, and the sentences didn't sound like they were chopped off in the middle. On the other side of this cassette, we talked about the difference between observation and inference and conclusion. And I wonder if we could detail that a little bit in terms of Mrs. Johnson and her behavior. Just from what we hear of her, not even seeing her, we can tell quite a bit from her. What would you say are the clues to her emotional state? Now, could you pick that up?
Well, the clues that I was looking for in the first part of the interview were the tone of her voice and the modulation and the sighing and the clipping of the sentences, that kind of thing. And I drew the inference that she was quite depressed, feeling very sad and lonesome, guilty. All the feelings that we put into that bag of depression. And then as the interview moved on, and as the counselor enabled her to talk about her own feelings, she begins to sound more alert, speak faster, sentences are more complete. She gets a note of surprise in her voice now and then, as if she's thinking, my goodness, there might be something else involved here. And she sounds sprightlier somehow, not more cheerful necessarily, but as if she's got a little more wherewithal to cope with what's going on inside of her. And I would then draw the inference that she is feeling some relief, that if I had some way to measure muscle tension, that there would be less of it. At this point in the interview than there was 40 minutes earlier.
That observation should probably be a part of your evaluation, shouldn't it? And what would you infer from her rather, well, you might say, rapid bounce back?
Well, I would make an evaluation that this is a woman who can be helped in a relatively short time. She's moved a great deal in, say, 40 minutes. And she's been helped by this particular counselor's listening and asking questions. And I would make an assessment that short-term continuing of this kind of counseling would be beneficial to her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's pick it up and see it go.
That might not be a bad thing to try sometimes. See how that makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I think it's interesting if you can get in touch with how you're feeling, and if you're feeling distressed. And that's probably interesting. Good thing to think about and talk about with you. Do you compare yourself with people down the street, because you felt neglected, and do you find yourself doing that, looking at other homes or other people and feeling that you've got an unusual situation?
Yeah, I think like most other husbands and wives talk to each other a lot more than Joe and I do. Certainly not everybody.
We'd like to have some conversation. Do you want to say something about that? What sort of things would you like to have happen?
Well, I suppose that this is a problem that would be feeling better myself. And maybe better feel better about himself. I don't know about that.
What kind of conversations do you have?
About yourself?
Yeah.
Not enough, man. I was walking a lot, and I was ear tired, and he's not interested in seeing the kids, and pretty kind of like to have them out of the way and doing sometimes. And I just think that's what you're doing sometimes, such a fat news, and after dinner, it's pretty. And after dinner, I do the dishes, and the kids in bed, and I'll get my family in there sometimes.
Do you sort of feel that you're in competition with water contact and some play on TV?
Yeah, there's a baseball football going on, that's even better.
Well, this is Jackie Fonseca again when she talks about her husband.
She does.
So Tom drops again, doesn't it? And if the senses aren't quick, it means she's not as tense as she was, but she sounds sad when she talks about the real problem in mm-hmm. her relationship with God.
The hopelessness is sad.
But here,
when she starts talking about this, this is an impossible situation.
Interesting. We were talking earlier about the expectations she thought and said that they were vague. A pastor now, in talking with her about hope for outcome. What would be different? How would you like things to be? She can be pretty realistic about this and say, you know, everybody's 8-year-old is like mine. And I think that some husbands and wives talk together more than Joe and I do. What she's putting into words there are her expectations, not of the counseling process, but of its results. This is what she would like to have happen. And that's pretty clear for her, isn't it? The process itself is still vague and mysterious to us.
She added one more thing, too. She said, I'd like to feel better about myself. I'd like to feel better about myself, and I'd like to see if Billy couldn't change or feel better about himself. And then the hopeless statement came in, I don't know about Joe. It's as if she shrugged her shoulders at that point and was back to feeling that, well, that was perhaps a lost cause. But here's a positive clue again. She goes on to talk about Joe. And she can talk about it, the hopelessness is there, but she's not blaming him, at least at this point in the case. She's not saying it's all his fault, he's so awfully bad. She's just saying this is the way it is.
So it was interesting that she brought in the fact that he comes home tired. I know that he's tired, so there's just a little bit of a thought, there's some reason for this.
There's an empathy there, isn't there? Maybe we need to give a name to that quality which we've noted in her, namely her ability to bounce back, and maybe we should call it bounce, huh? She has, seems to have pretty good bounce. She gets some empathy from the pastor, some understanding, and he assists her to talk about her feelings and her fears and about herself, and we notice that she picks up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be a pretty good indication that she can profit quite a bit from the kind of counseling the pastor can do for her. Let's continue with this.
Are you interested in this kind of thing?
Yeah, I thought.
You said you didn't really care. Do you have anything about this today?
Oh, I guess I have some time for you. What are you doing with that? You should be doing anything.
You said before that Billy needs to interview. Do you ever get an interview with him? That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you work that out?
I don't really say much to anything.
You don't say anything, he doesn't say anything, and everything
else. That's right. It seems better that way. If I try to talk to him, he's,
Why do you think that seems better? I think it's a good point. Why do you, what do you feel that it seems better?
No, I don't know how to say that it's angry or,
It's a joy, you know?
Yes.
Let it be done. Somehow we get the feeling that if we get angry, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know why you have to do that.
I think that's a beautiful example of the dumb question, and worthy of comment. What the pastor is doing here is challenging her assumption, namely that she mentioned this, her difficulty with Joe, or her unhappiness with this big behavior, would somehow just rain fire on her head is what she's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, wait, really? He's doing it via the dumb question they're doing. Just after a game again, make her say it, put it into words exactly what she is doing about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we really got some concern about how we react to this thing.
Well, yeah, maybe leave the house or, for a few hours or something like this. I was kind of beaten or anything.
Anyway, we try sometimes to tell, Bill he's tired and kind of totally agree with him, so he comes in tired at night.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really tired.
I'm tired too.
Alright, you're both tired. by then. And so you're both tired, and to have somebody come in and pick the block or really, to have somebody come and say, why don't you get out of the chair and talk to me? That's kind of that kind of encourages some kind of encounter. Is it possible at all to tell in some way how you're feeling without challenging them?
I just wanted to pick up on her little comment, I'm tired too, in response to the counselor's recognition that the husband was tired. It's as if the counselee says, hey, don't forget about me. We're here and I want to talk about me, and don't forget that I have some feelings. And the counselor picked up on it, laughed a little bit. Yeah, you're tired too. And then
well, that's progress, isn't it?
That's a lot of progress.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because she in effect is saying, I'm important. I'm here, listen to me.
Which she had a terrible time saying, and she spoke it out.
Right.
I thought I'd tried to, you know, I'd just tried to talk to him. Maybe I didn't get as far as telling him how I felt, but I tried to tell him that I thought we had a problem. And so you won't even admit that, so you don't go any further than that.
I guess I kind of hear you saying that you just sort of feel like you're sitting in a deep pit, and you've got no place to go.
Yeah, I think that.
Everything that you know how to try and just not able to get out of it.
I think that's fine here.
That's good. I'm glad you're saying. I think we came with food. I think there's a really good possibility. The fact that you faced up to this, you recognize that feelings react into something. He's not just a bad kid, bad chief. I think this is important. You realize that there is something that's dangerous about, and that you're feeling your own frustrations. And apparently, I do say that in some ways you can see why Joel is here in 1998, that you do feel the need to have some kind of communication. And that's the thing you can have happen and you can't get away from it. Is that, am I hearing what you're saying? Or is it, am I expressing what you're feeling?
I think so. My question is, there's something you can be done about it.
What the practice does here is summarizing, and it's interesting to notice how he does it. He does it rather tentatively. Checking with her. I think that's excellent. He's not saying, look lady, I know all about it and here's your problem. But he's saying, this is what she's told me. This is what I've gotten out of what she's told me. See if that's the way it looks to you.
Check it back.
Yeah.
Is that in fact what you told me?
Good communication technique.
Well, and I think the fact that she's here is a big step in the right direction. I'm sure that something can be done about it. It doesn't always come, it doesn't always disappear as quickly overnight as you just explained, when you said you saw it developing. And something that I think if you start looking at this and working at it together, I think something can happen. I'd like to suggest that we get together and perhaps there'll be time to go and explore this. I'd like to have you try a few things if you would. I think it'd be worthwhile. First of all, I think it might be worthwhile watching Billy once to see if he can figure out what's making him react on CDR. And I'd like to have you try this too, if you will, with Joel, to be in touch with yourself at any time to talk with him. It's kind of tough to have somebody come after you with some kind of question or the kind of thing that makes you defensive. And I know it's really, you know, how your frustration is with feeling, but maybe you can try a quick time to get some kind of communication going in a way that doesn't cause you to feel that way.
I would sort of say too that maybe it's not so bad if at least once or twice you try this anger thing. I mean, I'm not quite so sure that that's as bad as you're going to do. But that's because one or the other is gets angry. But if you're really not so sort of, can be a helpful thing, could be deceptive, of course. But I think one of the things that, you can work on. How about coming back next Wednesday at 2:30? And let's get together for at least for 5 or 6 times to go through this. I'd really like to work through it with you. And really, there are no easy methods to come out here. It happens time and again to people, to couples, and in a number of different ways. And there really is something that can be done about it. And if you work out, you think you could come back next Wednesday?
Okay. How bad do you think this is? I mean, you think 6 weeks can be it? How
do I know? Well, yeah, I don't know that I would consider it to be such a terribly bad thing. I think that I think we've got some real problems, and this is kind of enormous. There are real problems, and there are very real for this reason. And I think it's something that has to be worked at. And it's not going to go away. You know, I imagine there have been times when the sun is shining and you hope that the next morning, they would wake up on the street and the kids would have that kind of hope, kind of a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And it doesn't happen. But to get anything like this and work at it, you know, it's kind of tough to work through a thing like this that's worth it. And I don't think we can do it. I think that's chronic for a half different sessions, 6 days sessions, and I think it's a different test. I'd be real happy to go through it with you.
Okay, fine.
I'll see you next Wednesday at 2:30.
Good. So good. It feels a little better to have told somebody about it anyway.
Yeah.
An awful lot happened right in the last few minutes there that I didn't want to break into it. I wanted you to hear it as a complete thing. It's interesting, in setting the contrast with Mrs. Johnson, she forces the pastor to come up with his evaluation and to come clean with it. That is an interesting thing. And I think that's a relatively realistic thing. Portrayal. I think people do that. If we don't really say what we're thinking, they'll ask us. And that says the communication is relatively open, which is a good thing.
You're referring to her question, how bad am I?
Yeah. And one thing he might have done at that point that might help her a bit would have been to give it a label like that. And I don't think I'd use layman's language. I would say, well, you got the blues, or something like that. And it happens to people. He applies, I've seen this sort of thing before, you know. It doesn't scare me particularly. I'm not trembling in my boots. I'm just sort of talking to you. You know. Crazy or going crazy, not a problem. He calls it a problem and labels it that much.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he would label it a bit more instead of perhaps the other three.
I think in the act of saying you have a problem, but we can work it through, he is reassuring her. I was struck by the translator not giving false reassurance. That is, she says, how bad am I? And he doesn't jump in to say, oh, not that at all. If he had said that, he may have laid her anxiety so low that she would not have come back the next week.
Mm-hmm.
She may have gone out of the office feeling that there was no reason to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need to make the distinction between true reassurance that there is a problem here, I've seen it before, we can work it through, I want to work it through with you, and the false reassurance that doesn't help at all.
Isn't there a guilt factor here? It could be that when she was saying, how bad am I, that she was feeling guilty about this. For me to be this way, a mother, a Christian, a wife, and then to be like this when I live in America and I've got all these things that there's a little history with it, but she, you know, that she ought not to have, that has to be dealt with.
From a different place of words on her part, how bad am I? I don't know if it meant all that guilt or if it was just a question of how serious am I out of line and how bad shape am I. Could be either one. I like your idea of homework for her, that puts something of the counseling relationship in between now and the next hour.
It also implies that the pastor feels that she's healthy enough to do something. Feels that she has the capacity to go home and try some things without getting worse.
Mm-hmm. The homework way had two parts to it. Look at Billy and try to figure out what it is that's really troubling him. And kind of a little keep up the communication between you and Billy a little bit. And the invitation there was.
Yes,
the invitation there was beautiful. Joe's anger doesn't scare me a bit, but it's not after coming back.
But I think that was a realistic reassurance. He said it tentatively, but he said it clearly. He said, I try to take a look at this anger thing, giving her permission, in other words, to let herself go and be angry at Joe. And then he tentatively, said, I'm not sure that that's such a big problem as you think it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of permission in that to do something differently than she's done it before.
Okay, fine. We've been listening to the role play between Pastor Bowles and fictitious Mrs. Johnson, and he has now set the contract, a somewhat tentative contract, for six or so sessions, he said, and given her some homework to do in between, and she has responded and said it helps to have told someone about it. That's the Johnson Pacific Series. With me again is Mary Kirkberg and Pastor Al Bowles, and Dr. Bonnacci. And we have here a paper cutting of a role-played counseling situation between Pastor Bowles and a fictitious person by the name of Mrs. Johnson. Mrs. Johnson is played by Judy Chandler. Mrs. Johnson is a 27-year-old housewife. She has been married for 9 years. She has three small children, Billy, age 8, John, age 4, and age 1. She has called for an appointment with her pastor. She and her husband are members of Pastor Bowles' congregation. And as this episode opens, she is coming into Pastor Bowles' office.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Come on in.
Hello, Pastor.
You can hang and drop it on your foot out there, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
Go back from the kitchen, Dick?
Yes, we got back late tonight now.
So it was a long weekend trip, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said he wanted to go live. He said, Dad, said not this time.
No, this was the guy from work.
They told me last week that things have been a little slow on the drive.
Oh, it's kind of awesome, man. Sometimes he just comes from every time.
Did they talk to you about the saving the life again?
Yes. I'm kind of interested in that, I guess.
Yeah, they probably need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy doesn't care if you can find the time.
Okay.
I'm glad you called.
You mentioned Billy before, and I want to talk to you a little bit about Billy. He's been having a lot of trouble at school, and the teachers have finally had a class on him once a week, you know.
Okay, what we've had here so far has been a little bit of chit-chat, right? Typical of a conference situation, wouldn't you say? Mrs. Johnson comes in, she and the pastor talk together, easily and casually, getting used to each other a little bit, getting used to being together, and pastor asks about Joe's fishing trip and about the office world. Maybe we could say a word or two right now about what her expectations would be at this point. Would you have any guess? What might she be expecting from you at this point?
I would feel that from her situation that she really didn't know exactly what she could expect, except that she was pretty desperate. She wanted something to happen. She wanted some kind of relief, and I think she was hoping to get that from the pastor, not knowing exactly what this was, because I think she was pretty much committed to the pastor that wasn't much that anything anybody could do. She was depressed, she saw the situation, and she really didn't see any way out, but she was hoping for some kind of relief.
Somebody had said somewhere along the line, it's a good idea to talk to your pastor when you got a problem. I want to see about him. That's what she was responding to.
She may not, at this point, have known what the real problem is. It's evident in the tone of her voice and in the clearing of her throat and in the way she tapped the sentences up that she's tense. And not knowing what's going to happen, perhaps. And then as the pastor, in a very warm way, making accepting comments and asking her about her family, seems to approve of what she is and what she's doing. She begins to warm up and begins to open up a little bit.
She begins to feel a little better about being there. And things like
that. A little more relaxed. It comes through in the sound of her voice.
She still is not, her expectations, you would say, are very fuzzy. I'm going to feel better if I do this kind of expectation.
I get the feeling she doesn't quite know what the pastor would like her to talk about at this point, and that she's waiting for him to give her some direction.
Okay, right as you started off, she was moving into something about Billy. Let's pick it up there again and see what comes about, okay?
Okay. or he's not even willing to listen to his father.
The other
sort of thing that sort of sometimes is, yeah, they can do that on those sometimes too. But things like going to an hour, so it's good.
Really good.
Yeah. They really want to do that. They want to do it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. I think they're still having one, and I know there's some of it, but I didn't realize that it was there.
I'm hearing something very important in Mrs. Johnson's conversation with the pastor, and that is that she has given at least 3 clues to let him know that the problem is not with her child. Her second or third comment when she came into the office was that Joe was off fishing with just the guys in the office. And then she, in talking about Billy, says he seems to just be mean in order to give me trouble. And in response to the pastor's comment about, does your husband get involved, she says, no, he seems to think that that's my job. And those three comments were accompanied with some sighing and with a very depressed tone of voice. And I think the counselor would need to pick up here that the situation, the problem, may not at all be with the children, but it has something to do with Mrs. Johnson's feelings about her husband and her feelings about herself.
So you have the problem of moving from the content she's talking about to a different level on that.
Exactly. We're in the process, the counselor is in the process of defining what the problem really is, and he needs to be aware of it. She may be saying something quite different from what it really is.
Something that comes through pretty strong to me is the difficulty she has in maintaining a conversation about the boy. It's kind of hard for her to do.
Let me plug in here. I caught this in listening to this. It's a kind of interesting thing when we listen back and have participated. This comment that I made about I saw Billy at school and I didn't realize it's bad, as I listen to this now, was not a good comment in my estimation. It seems to me that I was, this wasn't really the problem, but I was also reinforcing this kind of depressed feeling by saying, well, this is really bad news. That drives me when I came out with that. I didn't realize that the situation was this bad. He's already feeling like it's a bad situation without my reinforcing of that.
One other thing that I pick up on is that most of the questions from the counselor have been fact-oriented questions. How is Billy doing at school? How does he get along with the other children? And I think one of the reasons that she has trouble answering those questions is that she's so close to breaking down herself. She sounds as if she's ready to cry or ready to blow up. And the counselor needs to be aware of that and needs to time his questions and perhaps at some point make a statement like, all of this must be very difficult for you, in an attempt to get her to talk more about her own feelings.
He was responding to probably not aware of the consequences. He was responding to the difficulties he's having. Right there, that she is having difficulty, and he's trying to assist her to get a story out about the boy. And that's what he'd be going on the fast-forwarding question.
I think it's interesting. It makes us tense to listen to her talk.
Mm-hmm.
And a counselor in that situation would perhaps be tense too, particularly if he were inexperienced or new at it.
And a counselor learns after a while to respond to his own feelings in a situation like that. So why make it my pretend to it? Maybe it's because all these microphones are on. So let's pick it up again.
Is there anything you want to ask? What's the worst part about it for you in the second?
Lots of things, I guess. I feel terrible, and I do want to cry and things like that. And I get thinking of it well. And I feel like he's not doing his part. I end up screaming at the kids, and I get disgusted with myself, and then I feel aggressive, they say that they're paying attention to me, and try to talk to him, he's really not interested in me. I feel awful about the whole thing.
That was a beautiful statement, because you hear how the comment by the counselor let her, help her open up. She said, "What's the worst part of all this for you?" And she just spilled over. "I feel terrible, I feel awful, I feel angry with God, I feel guilty.
I'm a bad person.
I'm a terribly bad person," is the sense of it.
That was the counselor being sensitive to her feelings.
Okay,
thank you.
Has this been going on for some time, or is it something that just happened recently? Well, it feels in the third grade, and how long has this been going on? Tell me a little more about what really happened, and when he's at home, or when the two really get together, or what really goes on when you have an encounter with him.
So just the other day, he came home from school, and Dan was playing with one of his toys, one of those building blocks things. And he walked in and kicked it over. And I was in the mess. And it made me angry, and I yelled at him and got into his room for the rest of the evening.
What how loud is it you have to do?
I think it was about 9 hours.
Were you able in any way to work anything out, or did it just end back there? Is this more of a handling story in school?
I think she's trying hard. She's doing a good job.
There's no idea what could keep you from really getting through to her, huh?
I don't know. I guess you can't bring it all on maybe a little kid, but I must be something wrong with me too.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that, because he's obviously reacting to something. Some of it, I suppose, you expect from doing the things, but he must be reacting to something that's taking place. Can you get in touch at all with what that might be?
It's interesting that here Mrs. Johnson has given the counselor a signal that she's ready to talk about herself. And he picks up on it. She says, "It must be something to do with me." And she doesn't say,
Yeah, you're right. To give some leeway, he says, well, we do know that Billy must be reacting to something. And it's a very accepting kind of thing. It makes it very comfortable for her to then go on and perhaps tell a little bit more about herself. And the pastor invites that and says, can we talk a little more about that?
He could have said, yeah, that's right, there's something wrong with you, lady. Or he could have said the opposite, oh, it couldn't be that.
Exactly.
And he said neither one. He just said something that allowed her to continue talking about it.
Had he made either of those two comments, he would have cut her off from exploring herself.
Yes, but the ministry of sex to give sympathy might have led him to say, well, it couldn't be anything wrong with you, Mrs. Johnson, because I know you're a good mother, pat on the head, you know. But you turned it off there and couldn't have done anything unless he was ready to override this anger.
I probably missed a cue where I could have come in any quicker when she said he tipped us over for no reason at all. As I listen to this now, had I been there, I could have cued in by the same thing. It's a thing that I apparently missed at that point, and I brought it in later on, but I could have. That thing left us wide open to say, do you think that's really so? That this is for no reason at all.
This is just a question of intention.
Yeah,
you're going to say it. Okay, well, how about her expectations now? Mrs. Johnson, you strike me like the kind of person that I think Pastor sees a fair amount of. She's not a sophisticated consumer of confidence. She's got a problem that she's aware of in a kind of vague way. And she has come seeking help. She doesn't really know how to get it. And part of the counselor's task with Mrs. Johnson is to help her get it, to help her to deal with the emotional stuff that's inside her. And that's what he's doing. It's easier in some ways to have somebody who is a trained friend, who has been through this before, or read all the books, and knows that they got to talk about emotional stuff. Mrs. Johnson doesn't behave that way. She behaves in a way that I think tough to see a lot of, however.
And yet she's doing what the sophisticated client does. Anyway, even without knowing the words for it, she's moved from being fearful and somewhat apprehensive and giving a cover story about difficulties with her children to the point of tentatively saying, I think I have something to do with this situation too. And it's the process that's important. It's that kind of movement that the counselor facilitates that's important, whether we put big words to it or not.
More than that, she's exposed the worst fear she has, meaning there's something wrong with me.
Right. There's a lot of evidence that this woman is feeling very guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And she's beginning to say that.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really like the situation that she's in. This is the thing that comes through, anybody looking in from the outside would say, she's just a crabby lady. She doesn't really want that kind of situation, but there's nothing she can do about it if she feels at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the hopelessness comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone looking in from the outside might also say this is just a complainer, a whiner, but this young woman is giving us lots of clues that there's a real storm inside of her. You can hear all the time that she does. Every time she makes a comment that is a hurtful one, either about her child or about her relationship with her husband, she sighs and she lets sentences trail off. And you begin to get the feeling that she's not so much a complainer, but she is just at her wit's end. She's desperate.
Yes, I was thinking about listening that One thing is, I find myself feeling the other guy is an example. He hurts, doesn't he? And that comes through in the way she talks.
Is this probably the point to bring in the fact that in counseling, if you are alert to what you see happening, the pastoral counselor, as he's living with the family in whatever situation that might be, and if you are alert, you can begin to pick up some signs which you might not act upon immediately, but which you would keep in mind. And one of these, for example, is Billy's reaction. If the pastor did indeed talk to the teacher or saw Billy, he ought to be asking himself some questions of why this reaction. There's something up here that is not evident, and yet there's something to keep in mind for the whole picture of what's coming up.
So you would see a red flag in Billy's behavior. So, a child who had been doing all right in school begins acting up. You say something's wrong somewhere. Okay. So continue.
I'm not sure, yeah. I just know I'm not very happy with myself. Maybe I don't know if that's the problem. Yeah.
Can you think of any other situations where this took place? Can you think of any other situations where this problem took place? So you took the glass, can you mention some of the other situations?
Mm-hmm. Give me a hug.
Give me a hug, it's good.
I mean, if he's going to be mad at somebody all the time, or if he's out of his way to pick on the other kids, and, walk by somebody and have to pick on the skin. It's just going on a little time all the time.
So he acts like he's mad at the world, huh?
Yeah, that's
fine. Does this happen when we're all home together? Or is it more likely to happen when you're telling something?
Yeah, I guess it's more likely to happen when we're telling something, but it does happen to my father too.
How does Phil react to this? How does he handle this?
Well, he gets pretty impatient with him, and he really does need to do something like that.
Can you ever let Billy tell you how he's feeling? Did he just react in a hostile way, or did you ever let him tell you, what makes him feel this way?
No, I just didn't.
What do you think would happen if you told you that how he was feeling? Did he just tell you angry, or that he was angry at you, or that he was angry at Joe, or how do you think you'd react to this?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe I would ask them some more questions, but I don't know why you're angry. Maybe I'm just get angry right then, because I don't know what I'm doing.
We hear the counselor doing something very important here. He's raising the possibility of a different kind of behavior. In his question to Mrs. Johnson, have you ever talked with Bill about his feelings? And she says no, and he says, what do you think would happen? And she begins to reflect upon how Billy's behavior might be different or might not be different. But the process is one of raising some hope for her, perhaps, that things can be different. Hearing a voice,
mm-hmm.
She's not talking in such a low tone,
and she's responding quicker. She sounds more alert.
This is really new input for her, isn't
it? Exactly.
And you get the feeling that the Johnson household emotion is not much paid attention to, nor is communication. And that's part of the difficulty.
Mm-hmm. You hear that so clearly when she says, "I don't know. I never asked him." And it's like he has a real surprise, there's a real surprise quality in his voice, as if it's a whole new thing to think of asking a child how he feels about something.
Yeah. You need to take that into your phone.
I think that's an interesting point, because you feel like we get kind of like that to him. He probably knows that what kind of reaction he's going to get. It's happened often enough that he doesn't expect something else, I guess. What about, how about the other children? Maybe that's the situation of them. Besides being in the middle of his family, but
I don't know if it's because they're older. Because they're so young, they didn't speak to them in this way. Still, they're getting better occasionally, but I guess they're out there then.
How does that, you said before that felt you didn't feel good about yourself. You got disgusted with yourself, and I feel that you could be really kind of wish that hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
Really how it makes you feel, other than that you don't feel good about yourself? Can you get in touch with what it is that causes you to feel disgusted with yourself?
All kinds of things to start to me.
Okay, we need to break there because we're running out of time. It's interesting where we end up on this segment, because our pastor is asking questions again, factual questions about the environment of the other children and how long and these kinds of questions. And that leads us very nicely into cassette 2, which has to do with evaluation.